is Hockey Central with David Amber, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. Great to have you along. Here we go. 2 hours of Hockey Central. No shortage of storylines. We have a great 2 hours coming your way. I can tell you, Nick Backstrom, fresh off that new contract extension with the Washington Capitals. He'll join us in about an hour's time. As well, we're going to break down everything that shook down in the National Hockey League last night. A big win for the Leafs. Sidney Crosby's incredible triumphant return. Jack Eichel was doing amazing things. Philip Forsberg was doing amazing things. However, one story trumps everything, fellas, and that's the story out of Vegas. The surprising, some would say shocking, departure from Sin City for one Gerard Gallant, dismissed today, replaced by Peter DeBoer, the man that eliminated him in the playoffs in a very controversial way last year when DeBoer was coaching the San Jose Sharks. We're going to dig into that. We're going to rifle through the Fast Five and then get really dig deep on what's happened in Vegas with the dismissal of Gerard Gallant, the seventh head coach dismissed already this year. So let's start with our Fast Five. And Justin, the big news in Vegas is number one.
I guess the question for me is just, what are the expectations of a head coach? Like, if you're Gerard Gallant, you took over an expansion team, you went to the Stanley Cup Final. The next year, you lose in round one in game seven in the weirdest possible fashion, a game they probably shouldn't have lost. And then this year, they're like a point or two out of the first in the Pacific. I think they're probably three points out now. Yeah. So, you know, it's still halfway through the season, a lot of runway to go, and pretty much every fancy stat, if you like, says that's a pretty good hockey team there in Vegas. So what are the expectations? I don't know what you expect of a coach. You know, there's just no loyalty, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to dig into this. So let's get through the Fast Five and we can get right into this Vegas thing, because this is a really compelling theater, what's happening here. Last night, Anthony Auston Matthews, first hat trick, I guess we could say. He had a 4-goal game before, but has a hat trick as the Leafs win 7-4.
That's weird. He's gone 3 years in between scoring a hat trick. He has 29 2-goal games in between those spans. Now he has 34 on the season, second behind David Pastrnak. And people were calling me crazy 2 weeks ago when I said that he's going to win the Rocket Richard. So he's a streaky scorer, and there's no doubt in my mind he can score 50, 55 plus this year.
That's the expectation. He's up to 34 goals on the season. Meanwhile, Justin, Sid the Kid, triumphant return. Boy, he looked like he hadn't missed a beat, even though he had missed 28 games after that core surgery.
Yeah, every time he comes back from injury, it's like he's a refreshed, rejuvenated. He looks great. That's the second time he's come back from a long-term injury and came back and put up 4 points. A couple of weird quick stats, not really weird, but amazing. Over the course of his career, over like roughly 40% of the games he's played, he scored 2+ points in, which is like absolutely insane to me. And since he's been in the league in 2005, he leads the league in 4-point games with 33 of them.
33 4-point games.
Yes.
That's a cool 130 points
plus
right there.
no big deal.
Oh, my goodness. So Sid the Kid's back, and maybe, just maybe, and we hope to get into this later, are the Pittsburgh Penguins the team to beat in the National Hockey League? You can make that argument. They had the best record without Crosby. They had arguably the best player in the world, or one of the best players in the world. We'll dig into that a little bit later as well. Anthony, some more amazing goals we're seeing in the National Hockey League. This one courtesy of Philip Forsberg.
Yep, Philip Forsberg scoring the third lacrosse-style goal of the season. And what is baffling me, like everyone that goes in seems like it's becoming easier and easier. Here's Philip Forsberg not breaking stride off the faceoff, going right behind the net, not breaking stride, right to putting it top shelf. So it was overshadowed, though, by the win by Edmonton Oilers, who now is, jumped up into second in the Pacific now. Draisaitl, 2 goals, 1 assist. McDavid now, another 3 assists. They both respectively lead the league in scoring, with, 74 and 73 points each.
Yep.
Not bad for mid-January.
It's going to be quite the chase for the Art Ross between those two down the stretch, I imagine. And finally, Justin, Connor Hellebuyck. 41 save shutout. He actually tried to score into the empty net as well, which I thought was the most fun thing. Didn't. It was knocked down by Bo Horvat. But an exceptional night for Hellebuyck and the Jets, who beat the Canucks 4-0.
Yeah, if you ever have questions about the Jets' defense, it doesn't matter when the goaltender is that good. And that's something that we've said this season. When they get Vezina-caliber goaltending from Hellebuyck, that's a pretty good hockey team. When they don't, eh. So they got Vezina-caliber goaltending last night, and they looked really good. They have dominated the Canucks. I want to say that's 10 straight wins.
Something. It is.
10 straight wins over the Canucks, yeah. So that's a lopsided fight right there.
And the Winnipeg Jets, with that win, move into the second wild card, temporarily at least, in what's becoming a very competitive Western Conference. The team sitting right below Winnipeg in the standings in the Western Conference, none other than the Vegas Golden Knights. And that's where we have to begin Hockey Central, because maybe, just maybe, Vegas losing last night to Buffalo. It's now a four-game losing streak. Maybe that was the nail in the coffin for Gerard Gallant. As we find out this morning, if you're just waking up on the West Coast, Gerard Gallant out as head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. I want to get your guys' thoughts, and we're going to dig into this, but I want to give it a little bit of context. So for the conversation, Gerard Gallant has coached a number of teams. He's known as a good coach, a coach that's beloved by his players, will work. The players work hard for him. He's an affable guy. He holds them accountable, but does it in a way that's respectful, not demeaning. By all accounts, he's one of the better coaches out there. In the first year of Vegas's existence, he takes them to the Stanley Cup final, right? Took 20 guys, built an identity of this, like, we're miscast, we're outcast, we're misfits, we're going to run together. They go there. They get to the Stanley Cup final. They shock the NHL world. Last year, they have continued success. A horrible call in Game 7 versus San Jose. They lose Game 7. And, you know, this year, they're right on that playoff bubble right now. In fact, he was slated to be the head coach of the Pacific Division at the upcoming All-Star Game in a week and a half in St. Louis.
Yeah, you still get to go?
I think
what
those,
does happen?
We're going to find. I'm sure the league's going to make an announcement. My guess is he won't be there. My guess is maybe it'll go to Rick Tocchet, who currently leads.
I think DeBoer should go. They should send Pete DeBoer.
Which would be just the irony and the classic. So, all right. So that's the context. He's had what by anyone's standards would be an incredible 2+ year run with an expansion team. I don't know what other standard there could be. How do you explain dismissing Gerard Gallant based on everything we just talked about?
Well, again, I'm not going to pretend I'm in the know here, but I'm assuming it's not a managerial decision, probably an ownership, decision, just based on the high expectations that ownership group has. But let's keep in mind that it was an expansion team. Gerard Gallant won the Jack Adams Trophy, so he's a really, really good coach. And to take an expansion team and go to the Stanley Cup Finals, you'd think that you'd get a little bit of more leeway than a couple of years. So.
Four-game losing streak.
Sort of predicted this before, just based on there's a lot of good coaches available. So I think this is just the tip of the iceberg with regards to coaching changes now, because there's a lot of interims, but there are some good coaches that are still available, ready to step in. And say what you want about Pete DeBoer, he's a good coach. He's taken teams and improved them drastically. He went to the Cup Finals with the Jersey Devils. San Jose's had some playoff success over the years. So he knows how to coach also. So I think this is more so based on who's available and trying to make a decision based on that.
So is it the Berube bump? I'll call it that. Last year, midseason firing Mike Yoda, Berube. Berube leads them to the Cup. Oh, you got lightning in a bottle. And not more than that, because we see Berube's a bona fide coach and he has them in first place again. But you think it's, Bill Foley and the Maloof family saying, we need some sort of new energy here. We can get what St. Louis got a year ago. Do you feel that's part of this?
Yeah, I kind of do. I think Stewie makes a really good point that I think it has to do with who is out there, too. I don't think it was just bringing a new coach for the sake of bringing a new coach. They knew that there was good people out there. Pete DeBoer is obviously a very qualified guy. And I wonder, too, if there is some sort of, it's Las Vegas. They want it now. They want that action. They want that that quick high, to get a little energy back there in Vegas. But it is going to be interesting, but to your point, David, I'm just thinking, who was it? It was Pittsburgh that had Bylsma come in, and then they instantly went to the Cup Final. Then St. Louis did it.
And Sullivan too.
So you wonder if there's not that element of them recognizing we have a good team here. Could this sort of change spur something this season? It's not so much about down the road, but could it be a short-term coaching move? Could it do something to this?
But just looking at Boston, who's been pretty successful over the last couple of years, a lot of these teams the NHL have gone through 5, 6, 7. Montreal's gone through it eight game losing streaks where they're not making drastic moves, no knee-jerk moves. We know obviously Toronto made the move, but Tampa Bay stayed the course when they were down. They had some games in hand. They lost a bunch of games. They were sitting in 5th, 6th, 7th in the Atlantic Division. They stayed the course. Now look at them. They're second right now in the Atlantic Division. So I just don't like it that it's a knee-jerk reaction. And now if I'm, I said this a little bit earlier, if I'm coaches now, I'm looking for 5-year, 6-year deals because, here's a Jack Adams award winning coach gone after 2.5 years. I think that's unacceptable. But again, that's why I'm sitting here and I'm not in the league, they say.
But I will say there's definitely been something wrong with Vegas. Like every time we've looked at the standings versus the rosters, you go, well, that's not right. And, you know, if you were talking to the more analytical people, they'd say, well, they're, you know, they're not getting saves and their shooting percentage is low, which basically means they've been more unlucky than you'd expect.
But if they're sitting at 44 points in, you know, in the conference, they're 3 points out. They're 3 points out.
Yeah, but the expectation.
You know, so if they're sitting where San Jose is, yeah, I can understand it, but you go on a 3-4 game win here, you're back and you're running away with the Pacific.
But guys, this is about expectations.
It seems knee jerky to me. Yeah. It really does. They're on a losing streak, yes. You know, as you mentioned, Montreal's been on 2 8-game losing streaks. So they're on a 4-game losing streak, and they've gone in that time from first in the division to now the first out position outside the wild card, because that's how fluid the situation is here. If they win 3 in a row, they're sitting well. Like, it seems to me knee jerky, but one thing I'll say is, you know, to get back to the ownership group, Bill Foley's 75 years old, and by all accounts from things I've heard is, you know, his demands are pretty high. And listen, he paid $500 for an expansion team. I get it. Like, he wants
$500.
Sorry, make that
can I get one of those?
$500 million. Yes. Yeah. And I think the expectations are high. But I almost look at it as Gerard Gallant is a victim of his own success. Mm-hmm. Had they been the expansion team we all expected them to be, had they finished dead last in the league, had they been like the Ottawa Senators and San Jose Sharks in the early 90s or the Atlanta Thrashers in the late 90s, had they been one of those teams and then shown some levels of progression, we're probably not sitting here having this conversation.
Let that be a lesson, everyone, at your own job. Set the bar low. Do a terrible job for a while.
But as you mentioned, no, he's a great coach. He's got good pedigree. He's going to be unemployed as long as he wants to be, because there's a lot of jobs I think he's going to have, you know, the cat's meow in choosing whatever team he wants to go to going forward.
Now, let's spin this a little bit. Pete DeBoer has a great glowing resume, and we all expected, you know, he was unemployed for all of 36 days. So, I mean, it was a very short stint for him waiting for that next opportunity. Do you see him as a good fit with this group? And do you see there's going to be that coaching bump that we've seen in other places? Namely, we saw it in Calgary this year. We saw it in Toronto with Sheldon Keefe. Do you guys expect there to actually be a discernible difference? Or is this just, you know, you've gone from one very good coach to another very good coach?
I think so. I just think in hockey, it really does get your players' attention, and it makes it training camp for everyone all over again. Everyone is trying to prove themselves to the new coach. Everyone is, you know, it's a jerk on the metaphorical chain here for these guys. I do expect there to be a bump, not, you know, just to coincide with the fact that you expect their luck to get better, and it's a pretty darn good team in a division that is not all that strong from top to bottom. So I do expect there to be a bump here.
Yeah, I had Pete DeBoer as a coach in Florida. It was 15 years ago, but, you know, we underachieved, you know, offensively, but we were a defensively structured team. And you're looking at the Vegas Golden Knights, they're 15th in the league in goals against per game. Their penalty kill is 21st. So I could see an automatic jump on that just based on the attention to detail to defense. He does a lot of video. I'm assuming he's bringing Steve Spott, who's one of the great assistant coaches of the game. They're very detail-oriented. So I think with Vegas right now, they're sort of playing that run and gun hockey, and you know, their fate is sort of based on if Fleury's showing up or not, you know, on the defensive end. So I think with that structure, I think they're going to shore things up defensively.
There's certainly an irony to this whole thing, because it was last April and Vegas was on the cusp. They were, I think, 8 minutes away from eliminating Pete DeBoer and the San Jose Sharks. That, you know, horrible call. There's no other way to put it. That horrible phantom call, if you will, that landed the Sharks a 5-minute power play. They go out and score 4 goals. The game goes to overtime, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is Vegas gets eliminated. San Jose and Pete DeBoer move on, and now this. So there is a bit of an irony now. Pete DeBoer is jumping into the seat that
was
occupied. And
don't forget that Pete DeBoer in that same series was called a clown by Gerard Gallant in a press conference. So Gallant cannot be loving how this played out.
Oh, my goodness. And it's worth noting that we're expecting, so the Vegas Golden Knights lost last night in Buffalo. That's a whole nother story. Maybe that was the nail in the coffin, or maybe this was going to happen regardless. The fact that this happened so early in the morning leads me to believe there'd already been discussions with Pete DeBoer. I don't think they lost to Buffalo and then they called DeBoer last night, but we don't know that. We'll find out.
And plane will pick you up at the East Coast.
Yeah. So right now the Vegas Golden Knights are in Ottawa, where they continue their road trip. They've lost 4 in a row. We expect to hear from general manager Kelly McCrimmon, possibly the president George McPhee, around 12:30 Eastern time. So in about 15 minutes, as soon as that press conference starts, if it does begin, of course, we'll take you there live. So you'll hear, we're trying to fill in the blanks, but a lot of blanks hopefully will be filled in by that management group. about why getting rid of Gerard Gallant, the seventh head coach dismissed, were in January. Just to give you some context, and Stu, you talked about getting these five-year deals. You're darn right you better get a five-year guaranteed deal, because last year, in season, seven coaches replaced. Postseason, four coaches replaced. We're up to 11. This season, seven coaches replaced. So since the start of last year, 18 out of 31 head coaches have been replaced for, you know, some dismissed, some resigned, you know, the Bill Peters situation. But essentially, you've replaced more than 50% in the last, what is that now, from a year and a bit ago? I mean, we're talking less than 2 years.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I saw someone tweeted that Sheldon Keefe is now the 26th longest tenured coach in the NHL. Time flies, man.
That is shocking. So one thing that you guys talked about, I think this is worth addressing as well, is we all agree Gerard Gallant will have a job. I believe he's off to Moncton to go relax with his family a little bit and decompress, because I'm sure he's probably pretty surprised. You know, what have you done for me lately? Apparently not enough. You know, he really put this franchise on the map in many respects. I covered that Stanley Cup final between Washington and Vegas, and we talked a lot to the players about the impact of Gerard Gallant, and they all were effusive in their praise for him. You know, he got the most out of me. He brought us together. Remember, 20 players having not played together, thrown into this little mixed jambalaya of a hockey team.
One of the best coaching jobs ever.
One of the best coaching jobs ever, and less than 24 months later, unemployed. It's worth noting, because we all agree he's going to be hired, you know, or have job opportunities. Where do you think might be a good destination for Gerard Gallant?
Well, I think one that we had mentioned earlier today was Dallas. Dallas seemed like a good spot where there had been praise from Jim Nill. Was that you were mentioning earlier?
Well, I can read you a quote.
Sure.
Which we dug up. To give you some context here, Jim Nill and Gerard Gallant played together. They were former teammates on the Detroit Red Wings many moons ago. Here's a quote, Jim Nill, on Gerard Gallant from an article by Michael Tracos on January 26th, 2018. So this is when Vegas started to, you know, have a bit of a move and we're opening everyone's eyes. This is Jim Nill. I think Gerard could coach any type of team. I really do. He makes you part of the team. You're a valuable part of the team and you want to go to war for him. That's a great niche to have as a coach. That's pretty strong words from a man who's now in a position, if he wants, to hire Gerard Gallant. Rick Bowness has been doing great as the interim head coach, but he hadn't been as a head coach in, what, 17 years?
Yeah.
Do you think that's the right fit then, Stewie?
It is, but if I'm Gerard Gallant, you know, there's a lot of teams that obviously have the interim, you know, coaching tags right now, but there's some coaches around the league that are on the hot seat. And come off season, your options are going to open up a little bit more. So, you know, you settle for a Dallas, but I'm not going to name these other teams. It's pretty easy to connect the dots on that, but there might be some more destinations, a little bit better destinations that might have a little bit more long-term implications. So
you don't think Dallas is good? I mean, Dallas is a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's,
I can't say it without divulging who I'm thinking. So,
well, you can just, would you like me to?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll pass the buck to you.
The other one, after, you know, a team that's had 2 8-game losing streak and kind of underachieved this year is Montreal. Mm. The question that we don't know the answer to, I think we were just kind of spitballing. Does he speak French?
No, apparently he doesn't.
But he's not. Not necessary.
That to me seems crazy. The thought that Claude Julien would be on the hot seat to me seems as crazy as the fact that Gerard Gallant is unemployed right now.
Based on roster or injury or...
Claude Julien is a very good coach. His track record's impeccable.
Excellent.
And quite frankly, I think when you go through that roster, the Montreal Canadiens, have they underachieved? Maybe to a point, but not egregiously.
Yeah.
Right? Considering four of their top nine forwards have been out, right? They don't have a lot of forward depth. Look what he's been able to do as far as establishing Nick Suzuki into an everyday bona fide NHL player. Kotkaniemi continues to progress. Cale Fleury's starting to progress. I mean, his track record with these young guys has been great. Shea Weber's having a Norris-type season. I mean, I don't know. What are you putting on Claude Julien?
Let's just say his options are going to be in the Central Division. I'll leave it at that.
Was racking my brain now. Okay, yeah, that's a nice city. Yeah.
You wait till
the Midwest.
You wait till May. No.
Okay. I.
There's other options there. I see what you're saying.
Well, listen, we all are in agreement, though, that Gerard Gallant will be a hot commodity, and Pete DeBoer is an exceptional coach. I just don't like this. You know, I'm a host of shows. I'm usually not in a big position to editorialize, but I don't understand it, and I don't really like it.
I think it speaks to some. I agree with you. I don't like it either. It speaks to like the way a changing of in professional sports of, and I mentioned loyalty off the top of the show, like. It used to be you hired a guy and he was the guy for your team. That was your team's coach. I have a lot of respect for David Poile that he has very rarely fired coaches, right? Just a few times over his many, many years. It's like, that's the guy I'm choosing to go with. And it's not like, that's the guy I'm choosing to go with until I feel like doing something different. Not to mention, by the way, you're spending your owner's money when you keep firing these guys. So it's surprising that it happens that often.
But if all these coaches are available... weren't available, do you see them really making this call? I don't think so.
So you think it's really just a matter of
they identified DeBoer, hey, you know what, this is a guy that we could see taking the future of this club in their hands?
Well, again, in 10 minutes, we expect to be hearing, hopefully, from Kelly McCrimmon, the GM, and maybe he could fill in the blanks. And maybe that it might come down to simply as Peter DeBoer, we look at as a guy who could take this team from where they are to the next level, and we identified him, and it had nothing to do with Gerard's accomplishments behind the bench. Or maybe it's something entirely different. I mean, they are on a four-game losing streak. They are currently sitting out of a playoff spot, which is rare for the Vegas Golden Knights. They've essentially been in a playoff spot since they came into the league, right?
But it has felt right there from them, just in regards to this stretch where they've lost to, if you looked at the schedule, you know, and you were a Vegas Golden Knights fan, you said, we got Kings, Columbus, Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal coming up. You're like, all right, now we're going to take over the division. This is our time. And it's not just that they've lost. They lost by 3 to the Kings. They lost by 3 to the Blue Jackets. And they got beat by
Horrible
Buffalo.
Starts.
And they've looked.
Horrible starts. They've trailed 3-0 and 4-0 a couple of times. Yesterday, I don't know. First of all, Jack Eichel scored a Connor McDavid-esque type goal. It was absolutely end-to-end rush. It was the game-winning goal as Buffalo knocks off Vegas 4-2 last night. But you're right. They're going through a lull right now. Absolutely. But I think you said it best here. I was on the seat 3 weeks ago with you, and you said every team's flawed.
Yeah.
This isn't the Oilers, Islanders, you know, Penguins. This isn't a dynasty era.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a human element to that. They're doing it on the road. Why not wait? And I got sent down 10 times and felt a lot better going down to the minors when you're sitting in the GM's office upstairs as opposed to you're on the road in some side room. I got put on waivers like on the side of the road one time. Respect factor that I don't like. But again, this could be the new NHL where, hey, you know what? There's going to be a constant, musical chairs of coaches every 2 years. You never know.
Yeah, the home and road thing. I mean, Mike Babcock was dismissed after the Leafs lost to Vegas. I mean, it's happened, you know, of the 7 times, I'd say the majority have been on the road. Bill Peters was on the road as well. That was extenuating circumstance. Yeah. I believe Dallas was on the road as well. So it's interesting. There's a lot to dig into. Again, we're waiting to hear. We will take you live to a news conference. We're expecting to hear from the GM, Kelly McCrimmon, of the Vegas Golden Knights. The big news of the day, Gerard Gallant out as head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. Peter DeBoer replaces him behind the bench. We'll be digging into this. We'll be digging into the Leafs win from last night, Sidney Crosby's return. We have Nick Backstrom fresh off his contract, which he did himself. He didn't have an agent. We got to ask him about that. It's all coming up today on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Central. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, and David Amber. We are awaiting a Golden Knights news conference expected to start in the next few minutes. They're in Ottawa right now. Fresh on the heels of firing Gerard Gallant as their head coach. He'd been their only head coach, now replaced by Peter DeBoer. Gallant has had nothing but pretty much unexpected success in his 2+ years there, led the team to the Stanley Cup final, one of the craziest sports stories, period, you will find as an expansion team. Last year, led them back to the playoffs where they were eliminated in a controversial 7th game to the San Jose Sharks. And this year, on the cusp of a playoff spot, sitting essentially tied in points, but with fewer games in the Western Conference. So Gerard Gallant is gone, and we're waiting to hear from Kelly McCrimmon or possibly George McPhee in the next few minutes. We'll get you there live. Gentlemen, I want to ask, Gerard Gallant obviously is the fall guy in this whole situation, but when you look at the roster, look at the players, and they're paid quite handsomely. They brought in Mark Stone at a huge deal. They gave a pretty nice deal to Max Pacioretty. They've re-signed some guys. As we heard, Kelly McCrimmon is there. He's speaking. Let's send you there live.
Announced this morning that we've relieved head coach Gerard Gallant and assistant coach Mike Kelly from their coaching duties with our team. We would like to thank both men for their contributions during their time here. Together, we shared some real special moments over the course of their time as coaches. We'd also at this time like to welcome Peter DeBoer as the next coach of the hockey club. We're excited with the skill set that he brings to this job, what he can do for our team. With respect to what was behind the decision, as a manager, sometimes you have a feeling that something isn't the way you need it to be or want it to be. We feel we've underperformed a little bit, and certainly that's not to pile out at the feet of Mike and Gerard, but sometimes you feel a change is needed. So that was what went into the decision. Like anything we do, we try to do what we genuinely believe is in the best interests of the Golden Knights organization, and that's what we've done in this case.
It wasn't that long ago you went 1-4 in a row, so how long had you contemplated making this decision?
You know, it wasn't a specific block of games or a specific game. It's hard to put into words, I guess, unless you've done these jobs, but it's more just just the feeling that you have that a change might be needed. And I wish I could be more specific than that, but that's really how we felt. We thought about this a lot. It certainly wasn't something that we did in haste or something that we did based on, as you touched on, the recent four games. It was a decision that was arrived at over time.
Why Peter DeBoer?
I think Peter's a really good coach. He's had a lot of success in the National Hockey League. Of course, with him working most recently in the Pacific Division, we've had a chance to watch his teams play. I think that his teams are always very well prepared, very well coached. We expect that he'll do a really good job for us. I think he's a very respected coach in the industry.
To have Pete lined up right away, when was the first time you reached out to him?
This is all in the last 24 hours that any of this has gone on, so it came together very quickly, thus the announcement here today.
When you say the team has underperformed, what specifically has not gone as well as you think it should?
Well, again, Jesse, it's hard for me to get into specifics. I think that you've seen consistency issues. I think that's part of it. And again, I can't be more clear that that's not necessarily at the feet of the two guys who were relieved today. But, I think our team has more to give, and that was what went into the decision.
What element do you think that Peter DeBoer brings that will get you over the top or get you back on track or whatever you're looking for?
Well, I think he's always been a coach that has a lot of respect from his players. I think he relates well with players. He's an intelligent guy. Teams have always been very strong special teams. He's been to the Stanley Cup Finals with two different teams. He's enjoyed a lot of success in the National Hockey League as a coach. And I think with this opportunity, he'll continue to do that.
And then assistant coach spot is also open. Do you plan on moving someone into that?
For the time being, we'll bring Peter into our staff and carry on with Ryan Craig, Ryan McGill, and our video coach, Tom Cruise.
Do you expect Peter to be here for practice tomorrow?
I believe Peter will be in either late tonight or early tomorrow morning.
Can you talk about that? I want to go back to your decision to relieve Gerard, but did you go into this season wondering how this is going to play out, or is it just over the last few months, if you will?
No, we are like a lot of teams, had real high hopes for the year, still have real high hopes for the year. And, we're in a unique position. We're right in the mix. So this isn't a case where the bottom fell out and we were left with no choice. I guess it was a situation more where, proactively, it was our belief that this is what was going to be the best thing for our organization.
If Pete DeBoer isn't available, does this move happen, or is it more because he's...
There's no reason doing what-ifs on the hypotheticals. The events that have taken place, and that's where we are today.
Thank you.
All right, that was Golden Knights general manager Kelly McCrimmon fielding questions regarding the dismissal of Gerard Gallant and the hiring of Peter DeBoer. If you missed any of it or you just tuned in, essentially he explained it as this. The team's underperformed. He felt a change was needed. He said he had a feeling. It was more of a gut feeling than anything else. He said this decision was not made in haste. It was the decision that was arrived at in time. So they took their time to make this decision. He did, though, say that really the wheels became in motion in the last 24 hours when they reached out to Peter DeBoer, made a fit, agreed on a contract, and essentially hired him. So why DeBoer was a fit, he said he feels his teams are well-prepared, well-coached. He explained that, but he wouldn't dig into if DeBoer wasn't on the market, would Gallant still be the head coach? He didn't want to deal with ifs, ands, and buts in that case. What's your guys' reaction to what we just heard from Kelly McCrimmon?
The timeline's a little bit spotty, but...
Yeah. In terms of, like, we took our time with this, and it's like, you did? Seems pretty hasty, given, like, you know, you felt pretty good about that team going into this year.
Yeah, and it's pretty short... conference there. I was getting the timer out. I think it was like 3-4 minutes, right? So I guess with decisions like this, you want to be quick to the point and get the focus back on hockey. But I think this comes down to just based on the fact that DeBoer was available. And there's other coaches now that are still on the market now. And this is going to be a trick ripple effect where there's going to be other teams now evaluating, you know, what they're going to do for the long-term success of their teams. And I wouldn't be surprised if a team or two fire one of their coaches to bring in someone that's on the market right now.
Laviolette.
Yeah, Babcock. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would be a little uncomfortable, and this is just myself, but I would be uncomfortable as the general manager saying, you know, I just had a feeling. I would be uncomfortable because it says what I've built is better than this, isn't it? Like there's like an arrogance to it that's like, no, that's a better team. I'm better than that. I'm better than what we're, you know, what we're showing. There's an arrogance. Like, well, he's not doing it right. You know, like, he's not playing it how I want to play it.
That would make shifts the burden to the players.
We saw Tampa Bay make up 8, 9, 10 points in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the schedule that they have. They could be ahead in the conference by 5, 6 points by the end of that road trip.
In a week or two. By the way, so here's another thing for me is if you look at the save percentage of teams who fired their coaches. So two teams fired their coaches because of behavior issues, Calgary and Dallas. The other teams are New Jersey, so I don't know what the save percentage was at the time of firing, but right now New Jersey is a 902 save percentage. League average, 910, 912, makes a difference. 902 is bad. Mm-hmm. And then you have Vegas was a 900, San Jose, 891, Toronto, 899, and then there's one other team I'm missing. Oh, Nashville is an 891. So all these teams are getting bad goaltending, and all of a sudden the coaches are bad coaches.
Mm.
Wow. What a strange coincidence.
The whole you find me a good coach and I'll find you a good goaltender adage.
If they get 2017-18 Fleury this season in net and they're in first place by 4 points, does it make that much of a difference? Is Gallant that much of a better coach?
I don't like it. It's interesting. I think there's enough blame to go around from the player side of things, from maybe even the management side of things. And Gerard, I'm sure, would bear some of the burden as well of what's happened here. So the bottom line is this. Gerard Gallant is the 7th head coach dismissed in season so far this year, the 18th head coach replaced since the start of last season, which is a remarkable number. Peter DeBoer, unemployed for just 36 days, is back behind the bench, and we'll get to see what he's all about. They did say he's going to join the team tomorrow, which would be in time for their game against the Ottawa Senators. So a lot's happening, a lot to keep an eye on. Wow. Okay, so that's the big news today. What we're going to do now is take a quick break. We're going to come back because we want to reset and get into what happened last night on the ice. And there was a lot of storylines, including a big Leafs win, the return of Sidney Crosby, a lacrosse goal from Philip Forsberg, etc. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back here on Hockey Central to dig in onto last night's NHL action.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Central. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, David Amber. Great to have you along. It was a busy night in the National Hockey League last night, including the Maple Leafs ending their 3-game losing streak, a 7-4 win against what looked like a pretty lethargic effort from the New Jersey Devils, highlighted by an Auston Matthews hat trick. And maybe more importantly, it was the first game without Morgan Riley, their number one defenseman, and Rasmus Sandin, who was tremendous at the World Juniors, shows up and looked pretty damn good. 2 assists, moved the puck nicely, played well, didn't make mistakes.
Overall impressions of the game last night, Anthony?
A win's a win. And we'll look back out in this game, and I'm pretty sure the number one thing of it would be Auston Matthews had a hat trick. Mm. They won the game. But for me, when you're winning 6-1 in the third period, and again, I know I sound like I'm a stickler and, overanalyzing things, but sound like David Stickle. But these are games where you got to not let your goalie out to dry. Mm. And Freddie Anderson, time in and time out, has saved this team, has gotten these teams points. And that should be an easy 6-1, 6-2 max game for Freddie Anderson. But, you know, when it's 6-1 and we're going in trying to get some more cookies, as they used to say in the NHL, go and try to make it 7, 8, 9-1 and not pay attention to the details that got you to 6-1, you get results like this. So I'm only worried about now when you're playing this style against the Washingtons and the Tampas and the Carolinas, where if you have a 2-goal lead, and you're playing that way, it's not safe. It's not safe. And you're going to have these games where you're up 3-1 in the third period. The NHL, 9 times out of 10, that has to be a 3-1 win, 4-1 with an open net. You can't be letting up these leads because that mental toughness is not there right now. But you can have one or two of your top guys go to the races and have that offensive style. But, you know, Pierre Engvall's coming up from the minors, and he's turning the puck over at the blue line. He's trying to throw full-ice sauce passes on the penalty kill to regroup. You got to pay attention to the details in the NHL.
Yeah, it speaks to – it's hard in the media to ever accuse a team of not giving max effort because we don't really know, and a lot of times you're just kind of going on your feel of a game. But, like, it's games like this that make me feel like – we know that when the Leafs are diligent and working hard and doing the right things the way they play, and when they go up 6-1, you can see a change in the way they play. And you're right. Like, it becomes like, all right, point night. Who's getting a bunch tonight? Who's going in the dressing room after with a 5-pointer? And it's not like they're like, to hell with Freddie per se. They just, well, it's kind of like they are. I don't think it's a conscious effort, but they just, they're not as diligent, and they don't play within their structure. And Freddie deserves better than that.
Because if I'm Freddie Anderson, I'm going to be upset because my save percentage after last night should be 920, and it's 862.
Right.
So come contract time, they're going to say, well, you know, you're only playing 905 hockey. And he's going to look back at them and say, dude, you guys haven't played defense for the last 2 years here.
Yeah, every percentage point cost me $100,000. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so the devil's advocate in me wants to say, if the Leafs' biggest problem is how they're playing when they're up 6-1, those are good problems to be having.
Great,
okay?
Great
Look,
point.
They've scored the most goals of any team and had the best power play in the league since Peter DeBoer, since Sheldon Keefe took over. I mean, big picture, I wouldn't say it's nitpicking because we were doing the game last night and it was a pretty disgusting third period, but the game was over for all intents. They were never really in jeopardy of having that game slip
away.
But
I guarantee you, David, when PK scored that goal, you were probably pulling your hair like, oh, my God. Oh, I know how you watch the games, and you were getting excited. And that anxiety was there. But then Auston Matthews scores. Oh, Auston Matthews has a hat trick. That's the storyline. But the storyline is those 3 goals in that third period, and it's happened time and time again. What if it was 4-1 and they come back and score 3 of those goals, right?
Well, listen, tomorrow night, it's the Flames and the Leafs.
That'll
be a
test.
Much truer test. The Flames are going to come in incredibly hungry. They laid a bit of an egg in Montreal, and they're fighting for their playoff lives. We all know how competitive the Pacific Division is. This will be a better test for the Leafs. They're a stronger, bigger, more physical team. Sometimes those teams really can drive the Leafs nuts. What do you guys make, though? To me, the most impressive players yesterday, it wasn't Matthews and Marner, although they had their moments. It was Kapanen. It was Engvall, despite the couple of mistakes he made. And it was Zach Hyman.
Yeah.
Zach Hyman was on the puck like a dog on a bone. Yeah. And, you know, Marner had the primary assist, but Hyman did the work to get Marner the puck to get to Matthews. To me, when those guys are going, it's really elevating the rest of the guys as well.
And what I liked about Kapanen, he blocked a shot when it was 4-1 or 5-1 with his back. Mm-hmm. And you should have saw him. You see, he was pretty much in pain on the bench. So those are the details I'm talking about. And when everyone's buying in, doing those little things, you're going to cruise to 6-1, you know, 5-1 victories.
And you guys will like this. Jason Spezza, you'll love this. He became the 196th player in NHL history to play 1,100 games. And he played, you know, Sheldon keeps doing a great job of implementing some of these guys, the Gauthiers, the Spezzas, the Engvalls, the Timoshevs, at certain times and getting the most out of them as well. He's looking great right now.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate sitting here in January and saying, boy, wasn't Spezza great on the forecheck last night? But, hey, wasn't he? Like, he got in there and created the Gauthier goal. I think the big takeaway, though, if you're a Leafs fan or even just the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs is going, oh, thank God, it looks like Rasmus Sandin not only can play in the NHL level, he could contribute. He can move the needle for us in a positive direction. I think they've lost the option to sort of save that ELC, push it back a year down the road. I think they're going to need him this year. And how good he looked quarterbacking that power play was exciting. Even at 5-5, I really felt like there was something there and he could be a stabilizing force for that decor, which is a group that badly needs it. Their team needs that more than anything else. So now it's like, all right, well, can Liljegren pair with Sandin? Can we make get both these guys
Marinson
in the mix?
Marinson had a pretty good game yesterday also, right?
Yeah.
The early returns on a blue line, and that was the number one question. One, would Freddie Anderson bounce back? Freddie Anderson, we all are comfortable to say he had a bit of a lull, but he's a bona fide star goalie. And two, how would the blue line do? No Muzzin, and now no Morgan Rielly for the foreseeable future, right?
Yeah.
How did you guys feel about the blue line? The third period aside,
I didn't mind it. And I think that when you don't have your top two guys, arguably your top two guys, it focuses you now as a group to pay attention to those details. So, other than that third period, they didn't really give up too much off the fly, off the rush, off the flanks, which is good. They protected the middle really well. They were on, I'm not sure of their Corsi stats of last night, but the eye test, they passed the eye test.
And Todd Warner made a really good point, Justin. He said, you know what? Previously, with Rielly and Muzzin there, the defense was holding the puck, retreating, resetting a lot. That wasn't the case last night. Last night, it was the defense were getting the puck, and like most teams in the NHL, matriculate that puck up the ice. Get it to your forwards. Get it to your star, your skilled players. Get it to the Nylanders, the Matthews, the Marners, the Tavares, and just stay back in the proper position. And they seem to be doing that effectively last night.
Yeah, I think you look at this at your roster as a coach and say, how do we play to this group's strengths? And when you see you have Morgan Rielly, Jake Muzzin, Tyson Barrie, a lot of these guys, you go, okay, let's hang onto the puck and play possession style. But it's different when Marinchen is the guy, not a slight on him, but that's just not his style to, distribute the puck in the regroup or anything like that. So they look like they were cognizant of the guys they have and got the puck in deep. And it looked positive, but this is my concern with this team. They look good against lesser teams. They beat the crap out of inferior opponents. And I know you can't beat Boston when you're playing Detroit or when you're playing New Jersey. I understand that. I'm not saying that, but it's just that is a theme for me is that they look like they can run over teams when they play teams that don't have the talent. So I measure them not by these games, but more by how they look against a team like Calgary.
I believe they have three. I could be wrong, but I believe they have three more versus Boston. I believe they have three more versus Tampa. You're going to get your opportunity to see this team against bona fide opponents starting tomorrow night against the Calgary Flames, who are a legitimate playoff and a good playoff team.
By the way, their goal scoring, David, is absolutely absurd. They're first in the NHL in goals four now out of the 31 teams.
Yeah, but if you're Marner and you have a breakaway and you slide it to backdoor to Matthews there, that just shows how much confidence they have.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was yelling, from the
blue paint, yeah.
The synergy is nuts between those two. Does it kind of make you long for the fact we haven't seen this in the last few years? Like, we almost were deprived of having these two play together. It just seems like such a natural fit. The sniper and Matthews, the playmaker and Marner.
What's really got me with that is the two goals that Matthews has scored. I think one was on the Islanders and the one last night against the Devils, where he's just kind of off to the side of the net and does that cute little redirect chip. Like, that's something you need someone, an exceptional passer, to even know that you're in a dangerous spot there. Like, that is a special play that those two are making. So I think you're getting the most out of Matthews, who we already know could score without a guy like Marner.
It was interesting to see. We'll find out more the next two games at home to the Calgary Flames, and then on Saturday, Hockey Night in Canada versus the Chicago Blackhawks. When you look overall at Sandin, we only have about 45 seconds there. Is there a comparable? Is there a guy who reminds you of real quickly?
Well, I always say Matt Sundin just because the names are comparable, but he's a good young defenseman, and I think he could be, why can't he be a Makar down the road? There's very little amount of players that could come in and step in and have an impact in the first 1 or 2 years in the league. He's one of those guys.
It's interesting, and I can't think of a comparable off the top of my head.
He's not Makar, by the way.
Right, but like someone who... without being a big guy and without being flashy, just kind of does the right things and makes the right decisions. And you hate to say the comparable names of people who you think make the right decisions, because if I say Nick Lidstrom, people pull their hair out. But
the IQ is there.
Right, the IQ.
Speaking of Knicks, we're going to have Nick Backstrom coming up talking about his fresh new deal with the Caps on Hockey Central.
This is Hockey Central. Hockey Central with David Amber, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back in. It's hour two of Hockey Central, and great to have you along. Lots to dig into. We're moments away from talking to Nick Backstrom, fresh off his new deal with the Washington Capitals, the first place Washington Capitals, but fresh on their heels, the Pittsburgh Penguins. We've got a few minutes before we welcome in Nick Backstrom, so let's talk about these Penguins, guys. They had the best record in the National Hockey League without Sidney Crosby, 18-6-4. Crosby misses 28 games after core muscle surgery. Sid the Kid returns last night and looks like Sid the Kid. I mean, he's back. One goal, three assists. One of the more beautiful assists you'll see where he banks it off the back of the net and does a low seam pass to set up a goal. Are you looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins as bona fide not Stanley Cup favorites, but right there in that top echelon of teams?
Yeah, there's like a group of teams there for me. Washington, Tampa Bay and Boston are there-ish, but Pittsburgh is definitely one of those, you know, those four teams. St. Louis is probably in that mix too. So those five teams for me are in their own tier going into the playoffs or towards the playoffs.
What's shocking to me is that you can miss, you know, that amount of time, 28 games, and then come in and not miss a beat.
Yeah.
So I was talking, like, is he on the Russian gas or
what? What's he doing in that time
like,
off?
I remember missing a week, or you come back after a day off, your legs are so heavy, it takes you a couple days to get back. But that just shows that he is still in the conversation for one of the best players in the world, because you come back off the couch after 28 games and you're the best player in the world again. And it shows with his four-point night. He's coming in, throwing backdoor passes. He's skating through the neutral zone at full speed. Usually it takes you three, four, five, six games. You know, we saw Willie Nylander, how long it took him. So that just shows why he's one of the best players.
And after core surgery as well, like we're talking surgery. Sometimes the adrenaline carries a guy through the first game, I've heard, and then it's the second and third game where the legs get a little more lead-like. It's worth noting, we're talking about the Penguins and how good they are, and Crosby, how good they are. Forget about what we're saying. Someone who played against them last night, Zach Parise, had some incredible praise, not just for Crosby, but for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And listen to what Zach Parise had to say following the beatdown they suffered, 7-3 loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
It's a good game by them. Their puck support all over the ice was crazy. They always had three guys on the puck, offensively and defensively. They make small little short passes up the ice together, and you know, they come at you 100 miles an hour, and that made it really tough.
So that's pretty candid praise from Zach Parise, who's a bona fide star in his own right, to say, wow, like, felt like we were in mud almost. They were coming at us 100 miles an hour. What do you guys make when you hear an opponent have that kind of praise after a game?
It makes you, you know, appreciate the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
You know, when Sidney Crosby went out, the whole hockey world's like, oh, there's Pittsburgh now. They're the goal. They're falling. But, you know, look at guys like Brian Rust stepping up. He's got 19 goals this year. Jared McCann's got 14 goals. Patrick Hornquist, I know he's a goal scorer. He's got 11 in 29 games. Dominic Calhoun stepping up with 10 goals. So when that shows the sign of a great team, when one, you know, wheel is missing, everyone steps up and takes its place. So Pittsburgh Penguins, and we know Jim Rutherford, he's always adding. So I can't picture this team getting any better, but I'm sure there's going to be some improvements made also.
So the Pittsburgh Penguins with the win are now 4 points behind the top team in the National Hockey League, and that would be the Washington Capitals. And the rich get richer. That's pretty appropriate to bring in our next guest, Nick Backstrom, fresh off a five-year, $46 million deal, well-earned by Nick Backstrom. Nick, thanks so much for doing this. Congratulations on the new deal. And you did it without an agent. So you got to take us behind the velvet rope. What's it like going into that negotiation where you're not insulated with an agent, sort of hearing the back and forth from the team, where you yourself are sitting there across from your GM?
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I think I came to this point that I just felt like I wanted to do it myself, and I'm interested in this, and I wanted to sit down face to face and see what he thought. And there's always easier to read each other than I think. So it worked out well. I mean, we had a great, honest conversation, and it went smoothly. So I'm happy about that.
What was the process like of doing research to go ahead and negotiate your own contract? Because I'm sure there was some element of, like, you know, what does a no-move trade or no-move look like in a no-trade? And I'm sure you had to do a lot of research. Did you contact other agents or talk to other players? What was that process like?
The process was actually pretty simple, and I knew about the details that I needed to get done, and I think we talked pretty open, and he knew this was new to me as well. So, I looked around obviously on different players' contract, but I'm gonna be honest with you guys, I had no like paperwork bringing in the meeting, so I was just telling him like, let's just sit down and make a deal. And
yeah.
Then after a couple of meetings back and forth with the details of the no move and signing bonus and stuff, we got it done.
Awesome.
Did it cross your mind at all to test the market in any sense, or were you 100% all in with Washington?
I was all in with Washington. That has been my goal since this season started. And I sat down with the management pretty early, and they told me that they wanted to sign me, so I knew right away that that was going to happen. So that was my main goal, and I'm very fortunate that I can stay here with Caps.
How long did it take, Nick, to go through the negotiation?
So I would say it was pretty quick, actually. It was back and forth maybe for 2 months. We took a little break there, a couple of weeks, but I honestly think that it was max 8 meetings between me and Brian there. So it was pretty quick, and that's the one thing we talked about too. I wanted to get it done before the playoffs start, so we don't have to worry about that. We can just focus on playing hockey.
I imagine your phone's going to be ringing a lot in the next couple months, and there's going to be other players approaching you and saying, hey, I understand you did a pretty good job without an agent. You know, what was it like? What advice would you give other players who are going to approach you inevitably and want your take on doing it alone?
Well, first of all, it's all about what kind of, and I feel like the most important thing is relationship with the club. And if you feel like, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there playing games and stuff like that, but I felt like this club was pretty honest. And if you feel like that's the way it is, I mean, I have nothing negative to say about it. It was pretty smooth, but obviously I have a lot of respect for agents too. I mean, obviously they know which buttons to press and stuff like that. But in this case, it was just friendly conversation. There was no yelling or anything.
I think that's awesome. You're able to do it so sort of amicably like that. That's pretty cool. I want to take it on the ice for a second and just talk about your unique position. I know that there's been some talk that you and Alex Ovechkin would potentially want to end your careers together in Washington and kind of stay there through the end. And maybe you can weigh in on that a little bit too, but just what it's like playing with Alex Ovechkin, particularly as someone who passes the puck like you do, are you constantly thinking about how to get him the puck, or are you just sort of playing the game as it operates? And when he's open, he's open.
No. Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's an honor to play with him, and been playing for him for a long time, and such a good friend of mine, and we've become really good friends. And I feel like on the ice here, I mean, I think if you have two guys open, I mean, him and another guy, I mean, I'm not just trying to look for him. Usually he's pretty open, and you always know he's got a really good chance to put it behind the keeper there. So, but you know, I mean, I think mostly like you got to know where he is on the ice. I mean, he's got different patterns on the ice. I mean, he's got certain spots that he likes to stand at. So I think that's the most important thing you got to know about playing with him. And I mean, he scores from everywhere. So that's only positive for us, right?
So we have the grade eight debate here pretty much every day here. Ovechkin has 28 goals this year and 686 on his career. Do you see him beating Wayne Gretzky's record eventually?
So I had this question before, and I love that you guys are talking about it, because if there's one guy that can challenge that record, it's him, I think. And I mean, we'll see how he does after this year. I mean, he's gonna re-sign and how many years he wants to keep playing, but if he's got it within reach, he's going to sign one more year just to try it. I can guarantee that.
You got the sense he wants to break that record, right? And you're a big part of that as well. I mean, you guys are attached at the hip.
No, I mean, I think some people says records are made to be broken. So, I mean, why not?
So I have a question for you. I've called you sort of the best playmaker of this generation. How many players, since you entered the league in 2007, how many players have more assists in that time than you?
Two.
None. It's you. You have the most assists. Right. 668 assists since you entered the league. So I want to.
Yeah, I was gonna say George Thornton and Henrik Sedin.
Good picks.
No, you're ahead of them all. So congratulations all right, on all right. that. Which begs the question. We all know what's going to happen on the power play. We've seen it. We've seen it 200 and something times from Ovechkin. Why haven't other teams found a way to neutralize that crossing pass, whether it's from you, whether it's from John Carlson, whomever, to Ovechkin? Why? It must surprise you that a coach hasn't come up with a scheme that's worked.
I don't know. I mean, I think if you look at all our games, I mean, obviously teams are playing us differently. And I mean, sometimes they're just trying to take Ovi away. But I mean, I honestly think that when they do, I mean, that's when other things open up. So and something's got to open up, even if they take him away or not. So some games he might just stand there looking around. But at the same time, I mean, that's when Oshie is open. Me or Kuznetsov is open. Carlson is open. I mean, I think that's been key for us on the power play for the last couple of years. So, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, hockey is developing and teams are trying to come up with new things. So you gotta try to stay ahead of the game and come up with new things also.
Well, that's actually exactly where I wanted to go. I'm just looking at your career stats, and you first played in the league in 2007, which, by the way, you've been remarkably healthy. So kudos on that. That's not an easy feat in the NHL. But how has your game had to change as the NHL has changed from the start of your career? When you look at yourself as a player, how are you different than you were 12 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first came to the league, I think it was a lot more. I mean, there was bigger players. The game was a little slower, and you could actually, you can make plays a little bit more. I mean, the game is so fast today, so I mean, you barely have any time to make plays. I mean, it's a lot of chip and chase, and I mean, the system is just, everyone is just on top of the system. I mean, how to play in the neutral zone, defensive zone. I mean, it's not a lot of space out there if you compare it to just only 5 years ago. I think it's changed a lot. So, which is fun too. I mean, everyone likes a faster game, but you just got to make sure you're in good position all the time. I mean, if you're not, that's one other team going to capitalize.
So when it's all said and done and you're retired, are you going to get into the agency business?
I will definitely not get into that. I'll come join you guys.
Hey, man, get into the broadcast business. You'll love it. Yeah. I want to ask you also about John Carlson, because he's putting up epic numbers as well, and he's really just showing why he's one of the great defensemen in the game. How aware are you guys of what he's doing this year, and how has it changed maybe the dynamic on your team that you've been able to have the success you've had despite the fact over the course of the last 2-3 years you've lost some other pretty solid defensemen?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm so impressed by him. He's been outstanding. And I mean, obviously, he's putting up great numbers, and everyone is happy about that, and I'm happy for him too. But, I mean, I don't think he gets enough credit how good he is defensively as well. I mean, he's an all-around guy. I mean, he starts plays. He breaks up plays. He's always in good position. He can be physical. And I mean, I think that part of the game, he's pretty all around, and he's developed as one of the top defense in the league, which is really good for us, and which I know the organization was looking for.
So it's interesting that you mentioned earlier about the way the game has changed, because he's a guy who thrives on the power play. Well, he thrives everywhere, but yourself too. But you're saying that the game has changed so that basically everything is so quick now, and you have to get rid of the puck so quickly. Just knowing the way you play, a more cerebral player like yourself, Do you feel like the way the game has changed has helped you, or would you rather play in an era where you get to hold on to the puck and make decisions more?
No, I like it this way, actually. I think it's just, I mean, even if I'm not a speedy guy, but at the same time, it's fun when things happening around you quickly, and you got to make smart decisions, quick plays. I mean, I think it's good for the hockey, and it's good for the fans too, I think. And I mean, so far I like it. So, but I mean, who knows what it's going to look like in 5 years.
I heard that Ryan Zimmerman from the world champion Washington Nationals actually went in net against you guys at practice one day. What was that like?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was great. He, I know him from before, and he challenged me 3 years ago. He said, "How hard can it be to be a hockey player?" I'm like, yeah, you come out to our practice. So now when he's UFA, so he got to come here, and he actually wanted to be a goalie without goalie skates on first. And we were like, no, you don't want that.
How did he do?
He did great, actually. He did good. He had a great glove. Blocker side, not so much, but really good glove.
Oh, that's hilarious. Let's leave you with this. We started this segment by talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins and the return of Sidney Crosby. I want to know, did you see Sidney's return last night? And if you can also describe a little bit of what this incredible rivalry that's emerged in the last decade between the Penguins and the Capitals.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I saw that he had 4 points, and it was just funny. I was talking to his former teammate, Carl Hagelin, a couple of days ago, and Hagelin said that, yeah, well, when he's going to be back, he's going to be flying. And I was like, yeah, he's probably going to have like 5-6 points out of the game. But So we were right about that. He had 4 points when he came back. But he's a hell of a player and fun to watch. And obviously everyone knows about our rivalry. It's fun games. I mean, they're emotion involved and very physical games. So it's always fun to play against them. They're a great team. They've been playing great. So they're probably happy that he's back too. So.
Well, we'd love the hockey gods to give us another Penguins-Capitals playoff series come springtime, so we'll look for that. One last thing before we let you go. I understand when a guy signs a new big deal like you just signed, you take everyone out to dinner, is that right? Stewie was saying you do that, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Is that the plan?
That's coming up. So, yeah, I hope they buy some wine too. So
money on the board.
Yeah, that too.
Well, congratulations, Nick, on the contract, on your career success, the Stanley Cup and everything else. It's been a great run, and you know, you're one of the good great guys in the league as well. So thank you so much for your time and continued success over the rest of the season.
All right, thanks, guys. Let's keep it going.
Yes, sir. All right, there's the Capitals, Nick Backstrom. Really just, and when I said it, one of the best playmakers of this generation, he really is. Some of it's forgotten because Alexander Ovechkin's probably the greatest pure goal scorer we've ever seen. But he has to have someone feeding him the puck. And it's by design that there is a playmaker like him, just like there was Brett Hull with Oates and, you know, Gretzky and Curry. Like, these guys need a guy to get them in the right spot to succeed. And he has been that guy.
Yeah, and what I like about him is, you know, and that's what I want the kids to sort of, when they're listening to this, how humble he is. He's talking about how great Ovechkin is, how great Crosby is, but he didn't even know that he was the number one assist.
Am I the greatest player ever?
Yeah. So
really, he is super humble.
So, and I think he's very, very underrated. He doesn't get the accolades that he should, especially this year, because, you know, John Carlson's having such a good season, Ovechkin, but the only way Ovechkin beats this record is if he has Backstrom feeding him that puck. So that's how important he is to breaking this record, and that just shows how great of a player he is.
I kind of think of him like oil in a machine, where you don't really see him, or you know, you look at the big parts and you think about them, but the way he's kind of slippery and smooth and just kind of keeps everything moving, and he's such an important part of making that whole machine work there in Washington.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And quite honestly, I've been sort of on the OV bandwagon for a number of years now, just saying I do think if he wants to, he will achieve that record as greatest goal scorer. A big part of my thinking was not just the way OV plays and how good he is, but that Nick Backstrom is his wingman. And if he's going to have Nick Backstrom for the next 5+ years, you know, it's a very doable thing because they have a synergy like we saw with the Sedin twins. you know, like we've seen with some of these other great duos in the National Hockey League, you know, when it's all said and done, they're going to go down as one of the great all-time duos. So, anyways, congratulations to him. It was pretty fascinating that he walked through this process on his own, and I wonder if other players, you know, Anthony, would you ever even consider trying to do a deal on your own?
GMs would laugh at me.
But I have so much respect for the idea of, like, I know about what I'm worth, and so do you. Can we just do this without, grinding?
Yeah, but the key word was the relationship with the organization. Yeah, right. There's only certain guys that command that respect from the organization. Absolutely. That can actually have, you know, a real conversation and not have it hurt anyone's feelings.
12 years, you build up some equity, you help win them a Stanley Cup. It's a different conversation than a guy who rolls in there after 2 or 3 years and wants to get paid full bank, right? So it's a good point. But as you said, I think he approached it in a very professional manner. Brian McClellan, who we had on the show 2 weeks ago, very professional guy. And I think they probably sat down and said, this doesn't have to get acrimonious or ugly or silly. You know, let's present the sort of terms and let's find some common ground. And clearly they did.
It is a tough spot for McClellan, though. If he was like, look, I think you're going to be worth about $7, but like, do you want to ruin that relationship? Like, it is a tough spot for him, but it's nice that they weren't. It seems like a very reasonable number for what he's done.
I want to see Berkey negotiate with a player.
Get out of here, get an agent.
On Friday, you guys have to ask him about that. Well, listen, you know what was interesting is Backstrom's last deal, I can't remember the terms, but it was worth 11% of the cap at the point.
I think it was 6.9.
And now it's worth 11% of the cap. So that probably was part of it as well. You know, we don't want you to eat up 15% of the cap. We don't want you to be getting 6% of the cap. Let's keep it along the same lines.
Because you're 6.7 million, sorry.
There you go. So, anyhow, that was great to have Nick Backstrom. We're going to take a quick break. We do want to dig in a little bit. Huge win for Connor Hellebuyck and the Jets last night. Jack Eichel did something incredible. Philip Forsberg, again, more incredible play from him. So there's a lot to get into. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hockey Central, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, David Amber coming up.
More Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back. Hockey Central, alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart. I'm David Amber, and lots to dig into last night. Let's start with Boston. They lose the game to Elvis Merzlikins, who had a second straight shutout. Columbus Blue Jackets, what a job John Tortorella's doing. They lose 3-0. But more importantly for Boston, they lose their goalie. Tuukka Rask left this game in the first period, after head contact was made. Emil Bemström skates by the net, catches him with a glove hand to the back of his head. Rask has a history of concussion problems. He left last year with his second concussion in a game. What do you guys make of the play? Penalty on the play.
I thought it was dirty. I was never a dirty player. I was the guy who won, Lady Bings at whatever level I was at. But I definitely, when I was near the goaltender, I wasn't pulling up, right? If you're driving to the net, I'd happily get pushed in. If I was cruising by, I wouldn't mind giving a little extra. That looked to me like a guy who knew he was skating by the goalie and leaned in a bit.
Don't tell Berkey you won Lady Bings, by the way.
I know, that is
Berkey
not smile
fun. Not
make
like
no one likes that. Yeah. No, I didn't like it at all. And I think it just goes back to the respect factor. And like even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, guys without visors, you'd watch your sticks a little bit more. That's a play where you got to get out of the goalie's way. You got to find a way to get out of his way. And we were talking about it, off air. Like, I think you should cement those nets in where you can't move them. Because if you're coming in and cutting across and you know that that net's not moving, you're going to ease up a bit. So I think you got to find a better way to sort of protect the goalies. And, you know, hopefully Tuukka Rask's injury is not too serious because, you know, he's had some concussion problems in the past.
Did it surprise you guys that there wasn't a response from the Bruins?
Response? Not really, but I bet you they didn't see it. The game is so quick and, you know, maybe no one saw that, but that's something where if I'm on the ice, you have to do something.
It was behind the play.
Your star player. Now I got to fight someone.
It was behind the play. The play was moving away from the Boston net and Bemström was coming from behind the Boston net and came out front.
Yeah.
And,
so I'll chalk that up to probably no one saw it.
It's actually remarkable how often that happens where you get to the dressing room after the game and talk to a couple guys and see some video and you go, whoa, that happened? Mm. Like you're in the game and it's not like they're showing replays on the Jumbotron for you. So it's,
So we await word on how injured Tuukka Rask is and how much, if any, time he will miss. The beauty of if there is a prolonged injury, the silver lining is you have Jaroslav Halak, who's played exceptionally well this year and they won't miss a beat, but we do hope Tuukka Rask is back ASAP. Let's stay with the goaltender theme. Connor Hellebuyck. No one had a better night than Hellebuyck. 41 saves, grabs the shutout, tries to score an empty net goal against Vancouver. It's batted down at his own blue line by Bo Horvat. He laughed after the game, said I needed a little bit more paprika on it, basically. But, you know, it's been the story of the Jets this year. They'll go as far as Hellebuck will take them. They have great offensive players, but the blue line's been a little bit decimated, and Hellebuck's been great this year.
Yeah, not to drag it back to the East, but he's having the season that Carey Price and the Montreal Canadiens needed him to have. Mm-hmm. And yeah. He's been their lifeline for this team this year. I know they have the offensive firepower, but whenever you lose that many defensemen in a short period of time, it's supposed to decimate you. And, they, you know, people are thinking that, you know, Winnipeg would have no chance of making the playoffs. But Connor Hellebuck's playing that great. He's had a couple off games the last couple weeks. But when he's on. And, you know, you almost think when he's on that he has the potential to get a shutout every night.
Yeah.
And he's zoned in. And last night was no differently.
Yeah. They have so much talent in Winnipeg. Like, their forward group is as fun to watch as any in the league, yes. As explosive as any in the league. So when he's on, that team is they're a tough out. So they need that from him, kind of from here on out. He's not a guy who can afford to take some chunk of the season off here for the Jets, or it could spell trouble for them.
Yeah, last five games, 3-1-1. He's got a 1.74 goals against, .946. That'll get it done.
That'll get you in playoffs. Very much. He does that down the stretch. They're good.
Jets sitting in the second wild card currently in the Western Conference. It's an incredible rat pack of teams in the Pacific Conference or Pacific Division. First to fifth is separated by just 3 points. And so Vancouver, that's a tough loss when you need points all the time, it seems, in that division, or you go from first to fifth quickly.
And that makes it very, a head scratcher for the Vegas move even more, because, you know, I think last week, the sky's falling in Edmonton and they get a couple wins. Oh, they're back in second place.
So yeah.
That's why it's a bit of a knee jerk reaction, because you put together 3, 4, 5 games, you're back in this and you can be back on top.
It is so fluid.
It is, but I think that's part of why they did it, because they see that it's that fluid and they feel like they could, if there is this coaching bump that there seems to be, I think they're looking to get it because they know how tight it is.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, Gerard Gallant was dismissed from his role as head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights early this morning. We had Kelly McCrimmon live news conference earlier where he talked about the timing of it, and he basically said the team's underperformed, and he had a feeling they needed to change things up, and you know, didn't 100% allude to something Anthony Stewart said, and that's that Peter DeBoer is available. You make a move when you have the coach you want available.
Yeah, but I like Berkey's approach. And when he was describing and talking about the Babcock firing, he mentioned, like, that's a last case scenario. And he says that as a GM, he owes his team, his coach, 2 trades. Mm. So when you think about what's going on in Vegas, is this really a last case scenario? But again, I'm sort of like the GM where you go by feelings as opposed to numbers, but it's still a head scratcher for me.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you, and the feeling is off. It just, has there been enough of that feeling? Like, it's only been a small chunk of the season where I've been like, boy, what's going on in Vegas?
I know you're in Vegas. Did you go check the odds and say, I don't like these odds? Yeah. I don't like the feelings of the line of our team making it.
Surrender the bet.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, now that's added a whole nother level of drama to that race. You know, there's 5 teams in that Pacific Division chasing down what could be 3 or 4 positions available in the postseason. So very interesting stuff there. Let's keep it in the Pacific. The Edmonton Oilers, an impressive win against the Nashville Predators. Connor McDavid doing McDavid-type things, another 3 assists. Draisaitl, 2 goals and an assist. One of them was an empty netter. Josh Archibald stepped up onto that top line, taking Zach Cassian's spot there. But the highlight that everyone's going to talk about and everyone's going to see isn't anything to do with McDavid or Draisaitl. It's Philip Forsberg, full speed, around the net, another Svechnikov / Mike Legg goal, another lacrosse-style goal. This is becoming, you know, I remember we were here a couple weeks ago and we said, is there going to be another lacrosse? There might be another 10 of these.
Yeah, so you say the Ziggy, tell them about the Ziggy thing, the stick shaving.
Yeah, Ziggy thinks that the players now are shaving
The
ends of their stick, because the way that he picked it up so easily, and trust me, I have a big toe on my stick, and it's pretty easy to scoop the puck up, but to do it in full stride and do it off the faceoff coming around the net and not break stride, something's up. So I'm not trying to blow the whistle on that, but again, I think I'm not a fan of it because I can't do it, but it's an amazing move, and I thought these moves are going to be few and far between, so it makes me excited now, because what are they going to be doing, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the line?
Flip at your butt end and smack
it. Yeah, you're going to be doing alley-oops or something. I don't know.
Are we at the stage now when a guy is moving around the net, goalies are now going to have to play it a little differently? Mike Smith was somewhat hugging the post, but he basically was able to shovel the puck in before Mike Smith was able to grab the post there. But are we going to see them approach it differently defensively?
Maybe you're going to have to start knocking the net off.
Yeah, maybe. But honestly, what was so impressive is, you're right, it's not like Smith didn't see it coming. He got over to the post and got his glove up in that top corner, and the Forsberg makes an adjustment. Like, he's bringing it up and actually throws it down off his body. Like, you know, now you're not just spinning around making the move. You're making midair adjustments. Like,
what did Philip Forsberg have for lunch yesterday? Because not only did he score the lacrosse style goal, twice he five-holed himself. He tried to do the Matthew Tkachuk, you know, five-hole goal that we saw the first week of the season. Twice, not once, twice during the game. And Mike Smith was asked about him, but Mike Smith said, I don't know if he's going to the All-Star game. And it looked like he was almost sitting there practicing for All-Star, you know, the shootout special or something.
Is he going? He's not going.
He's not going.
Well, maybe he's auditioning for the third man in that they are, the last man in that they already gave it away.
That's pretty often.
Just a bowl of Fun Dip on Skittles for lunch, whatever. I want to play like that.
So a big win for the Oilers, and you guys spoke about how fluid it is. So the Oilers went, I believe, from the second wild card. They're now second in the Pacific Division. The Flames play the Leafs tomorrow. The Flames right now are third in the Pacific, but they could jump into first in the division with a win against the Maple Leafs over on Sportsnet West. So those were some of the storylines. One other storyline, we talked about the return of Sidney Crosby. Kind of a crazy moment happened there, and I feel bad for Bruce Boudreau. A lineup card mistake by the Minnesota Wild, and Greg Patterson gets tapped right as the game's, you know, getting going. And, hey, your name's not on the roster. It's not in the lineup. You got to go. So they went with five defensemen all game. Have you guys seen that sort of thing happen?
I haven't seen it as a player, and just reading Bruce Boudreau's quotes, and he was, you know, a little bit nervous when Bill Guerin came up, came down to talk about it. And, you know, Boudreau mentions the first time it happened in 25 years. So it's an honest mistake. Probably, I'm not sure if, do they do the lineup cards by hand now, or is it all computerized?
Yeah, they still do. That was actually like one of my big moments.
So maybe there's a little dyslexic. Maybe there's a couple too many P's, names ending in P's. But again, it's an honest mistake. And again, you're all the mistakes are highlighted in the NHL. Honest mistake. It happened. Doesn't happen again. You move on.
But it is unbelievable with all the technology we have today, how they do lineups. So just in my time in the Toronto Marlies coaching staff, AJ McLean would make the lineup card for our team before the game and write it out by hand. And by the way, it was very important to have a better looking card than the other coaching staff. Yep. Be very diligent there. But then someone comes, takes it, walks it to the other dressing room.
Blame the assistant coaches. Yeah,
that's right. That's it. It's generally the assistant that fills it out, not always. Yeah. But then you get the other teams and you see who they're starting. You pick your starters. Yeah. Like, it's amazing to me that there's not some better
when I coach
carbon
the GTHL,
copies of the
it's
sheets.
It's all done electronically. Mm. I don't know anything about it. I hand it off to someone else. You deal with it because that's not my forte.
Now, you know who's dressing. You do it.
Meanwhile, Arizona, Taylor Hall, 2 goals. Phil Kessel, 2 goals. 1 beautiful snipe. And they beat San Jose. I believe the final score was 6-3. It was 6-3 last night. Arizona onto their third goalie. Kemper's out long term. He's been out a while now, and he was putting together a Vezina type season. Antti Raanta, it's been up and down, and injury, not injured, injured. You know, came back, and first game he comes back again, had a problem, a lower body injury. What do you make of Arizona? Couple questions here. First of all, what's your level of belief in this team? And secondly, you know, they're on to their third string goalie. If you're John Chayka, do you have to start and examine what your options might be because you don't know about, you know, Kemper or Raanta?
Well, I remember we were sitting here in November looking at their November with their road trip. They had a road trip from hell, November from hell, where they're traveling. They had, I think it was like 13 or 14 games in 28 nights, and it was going to be a disaster, and everyone's waiting for them to drop down the standings. So now with all these other teams, the Calgary's and the Vancouver's starting to play better, they were expecting Arizona to drop even more, but they're surviving all of this adversity throughout the year, and that's what people need to understand. When you survive this adversity, it brings the team closer together. They're well-coached by Rick Tocchet. I see them challenging for the Pacific. I know. But again, so is Vegas, so is Calgary, so is Vancouver.
I think they're one of the six teams that can win the Pacific.
Yeah, they're one of the five
personally.
Teams that can win it, personally.
You don't have strong belief in them, Justin?
I'm a little less bullish, I guess.
Why? They've added Taylor Hall, you know, Garland. They've had guys, we might say they've overachieved, but maybe these guys are just coming into their own. Rick Tocchet is getting every ounce of blood out of these guys, and it's going well so far.
And that's it. So Rick Tocchet, I believe, is getting every ounce of blood out of them he can, and they've had Vezina-caliber goaltending. I think their team save percentage for the year is like .923. I don't know if they can keep getting that save percentage. Maybe they'll be able to get close to it, but I think that their goaltending may not be quite as good, and with some injuries here, that's going to be a thing. And then I do look at elite top-end talent. To me, I believe makes a difference and pulls a team to the top of the standings and through in playoffs, and there are a few exceptions to that, and I look at the top end of the Coyotes roster. Yes, I like Taylor Hall, But, you know, he hasn't shown to be able to pull a team to, you know,
well, he did 2 years ago. Not deep in the playoffs, but 2 years
ago.
Got
him into a round, yeah.
So you're saying Edmonton's going to win the Pacific, is what you're saying.
Well, but I do think that they don't have enough top-end guys for me to be a true believer.
Well, it makes it interesting. And right now, Arizona is first in the Pacific by the slimmest of margins. They have a two-point lead on Edmonton, Calgary, three-point lead on Vancouver, and Vegas. So, I mean, it's unbelievable drama will be shaking down over the last 3 months in that division specifically. A little bit more to get to here on Hockey Central. We have Maddie has questions. I'm nervous because he always asks these pretty good questions and sometimes he stumps us. So Maddie has questions is coming up next. So keep it locked here. Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now we are four. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Great to have you along. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, David Amber, and Maddie has questions. Matt Marchese, our esteemed producer, is joining the show. Stu, how's he looking?
Salmon. He's going with the salmon today.
I'm trying to find stuff that he cannot
salmon,
make.
Not salmon,
it's the salmon.
I'm trying to find stuff he can't make fun of, so... All right.
And you thought salmon was the answer?
This is not salmon.
It's salmon.
Too dark to be salmon. This is a salmon you don't want to eat. Yeah, is what that is. That's
or
a
where.
Lake Ontario. The Lake Ontario where. Salmon. All right. Maddie has questions. It's finished. All right. So last night, Matt Calvert, for some reason, wanted to fight Jamie Benn. And Jamie Benn declined at first. And then... proceeded to pummel him. Why does anybody want to fight Jamie Benn anymore?
Doesn't seem like a very smart idea to me.
No.
I don't know. Is it, what do you say he is? 230? Something like that?
Unofficially. Yeah. I think he's 220.
Big man with a bad temper at times.
Give Calvert credit, though. I would not be standing in there against someone that size. I'm not sure why he wanted to.
Well, that's a smart trade-off. I mean, if he's, you know, you're dragging one of the key players and the captain off the ice for 5 minutes, it makes sense, right?
Yep.
I say he's not an easy five. There's easier targets to go after. Leave Jamie Benn alone.
Nicholas Backstrom was on the show earlier, and great job. It was such a fun interview.
Yeah,
just very open and honest. Does he get overshadowed by Ovechkin? Let's keep in mind, his two worst seasons were his rookie year and his fourth year, where he had 0.84 points per game.
Yeah.
How many points does he have now, Maddie?
This season?
No, in his career.
I believe he's up to like 960-something.
So he's closing out on the Century Club,
eh? Yeah, he's almost there. So as I pull this up here, this is...
I almost want to answer your question with a question.
So he's at 908 in 934 games.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's unbelievable. We talked a little bit earlier, but just how healthy he's been and how healthy Ovechkin has been. Like, it's one thing to say, has their duo been better than whatever, Crosby, Malkin, or whoever else you consider. But those guys are in every game and have been for a dozen years.
So my generation, when a guy made a good pass, you're like, hey, that guy's a young Adam Oates. So I think in the future generations, they're going to be seeing, hey, that guy's a young Nicholas Backstrom.
Yeah.
But he does get overshadowed a bit because Ovechkin, there's so... much to Ovechkin. He's such a showman and he's scoring goals. And that's the bottom line. People, you know, gravitate to a goal scorer and he might be the greatest goal scorer ever. So he does get overshadowed. People forget where the puck's being delivered. And I think the expectation is just, well, Backstrom's always finding him, you know? But I think maybe we almost take him for granted how good he is.
Is Stewie mentioned something about being like the young Adam Oates. Is that the bar now? You want to be the young. Like if you are that guy that people are being compared to, like if you're the young Patrick Kane or Johnny Gaudreau or whatever, is that the bar now?
Oh, you've made it. That's Pat, Brad Marchand said to the guy on Twitter, bud, you pretend to be me in the backyard, bud. Hey, bud.
How good is Brad Marchand on Twitter, by the way?
So his exact quote, because I had it here because I was going to bring it up. Your shootout is in your driveway, not in the NHL peasant.
Peasant. That's the worst.
You pretend to be me in your backyard. Dream big, bud. And the guy's initial response was to Brad Marchand holding the Stanley Cup, the picture. And he said, that's great and all, but at least I can pick up the puck cleanly in the shootout. Also, I'm sure last night is going over real well in the group text.
His response should have been press delete on his Twitter and just delete his whole social media.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good mic drop by
you got
Brad Marchand.
Who owns you? It's Brad Marchand.
So last night, Luke Kuechly, who was a star linebacker for the Carolina Panthers, retired at 28 after 8 seasons. Now, we see it more in football where guys retire early because of injury or just the future potential for injury. Why don't we see that as much in the NHL? Is it just the money?
No, I'll say this as an ex-player. A lot of people, hockey is sports is usually what people do, but with hockey players, they are hockey players. It's who they are. So it's tough to sort of, you know, lose that title because it sort of loses a part of your identity. So guys, you know, there's guys right now making $400 a week playing because they love the game that much, and that's who they identify as, a hockey player.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that it is, you kind of grow up in it, and that's the thing you are. I know in my psychology courses, one of the things they have you do is use five words to describe yourself, you know, whether you're Canadian or you're, you know, whatever you consider yourself as. And I know for myself, it's like hockey players, like one of the things. And when I left it, not being that is like a weird thing. So that would be part of it. The other thing is like football, you see the concussion issues seem worse. There seems to be, I would want out earlier if I saw some of the career post careers of NFL players.
They've said it well.
And these are stars that are retiring early too, which is even tougher to see. Like Sidney Crosby's had his fair share of injuries, and there was the one that had some people really worried, and he
came
back.
It's a lot easier to retire with $30 million in the bank than $300,000 in
the bank.
Yeah. I mean, some of the, and I think you brought it up with the CTE we're seeing in football, catastrophic, and you want to avoid, you know, I've worked in other sports other than hockey, and I've seen ex NFL players, and they're limping around in the studio doing TV after their career. Most of the hockey guys that, you know, I've been dealing with are pretty intact, you know, and you don't want to cross that fine line.
If you're a team looking for a forward at the deadline, which of these players would you rather acquire? Chris Kreider, Jason Zucker, Tyler Toffoli, or Ilya Kovalchuk? Stu, I may even take you out of this question, actually.
Jason Zucker. I think Zucker's a fantastic, dynamic player who, if put in the right situation, could really move the needle for a team.
He's still injured, though, isn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think Zucker's out with an injury, but healthy, Zucker would probably lead that list. Depends on the team. Kreider, I think, could be a very valuable asset. He has speed. He has size. When he plays with a certain level of determination, he's a very solid, you know, he's basically a prototypical power forward. The one issue with him is he doesn't do it every night. But knowing that there's a looming, you know, free agency contract coming his way, I think he's going to be pretty darn motivated. So Kreider or Zucker would be the...
Yeah, I want to say Kovalchuk, but Zucker also, I paid attention to him when he played with my brother, and he is next level speedy. He has that speed where he can score some big goals off the fly. So if you're a team looking to get faster at the deadline, he's at the top of the list.
With the bad blood brewing between, oh, look at that alliteration. That's nice. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. The Oilers and Flames seems like it might be the new top rivalry passing Vegas and San Jose. Is that the one we want to see? Or like you mentioned, David, in the Backstrom interview, are we really looking forward to a potential Capitals-Penguins playoff series? If you had to choose between the two in a playoff series, which one would it be?
I'm probably not, this isn't going to be a popular pick, but I'm going to say Penguins-Capitals. I think I think those are two of the most elite teams in the National Hockey League. With all due respect to the Oilers and Flames, it almost is a Mano versus Mano thing, and other guys are getting dragged into it. Do I think Milan Lucic has a huge hate on for the Oilers? No. You know, it's his former team. He's probably buddies with a lot of those guys. It's really a Matthew Tkachuk versus everyone, or Matthew Tkachuk versus Cassian. So I see it more as, you know, Penguins Caps, there's a lot of history there.
In terms of like a playoff series, Penguins Capitals, but like if you give me a game to watch tomorrow, I'm 100% tuning into Calgary Edmonton. I feel like this has really brought out the, like, baser instincts in me. Like, I want blood. I'm looking forward to their next game.
I don't want to shed any more light on that because I think it could get out of hand and some people can really get hurt. So, again, that's the parent and
the
minor hockey coach.
You think it's going to get out of hand?
Yeah, why not? Did you not see Cassian's face? He looked like Clubber Lang talking about what he's going to do to Rocky Balboa. Like...
there will be pain.
Seriously. So I'm going to leave it because I hope it dies and goes away. Don't tell Berkey I said that, though.
Okay, a quick one before we go. Gerard Gallant, Detroit, Dallas, or the field?
Seattle.
So the field.
Dallas.
Detroit, because that sounds fun.
maybe for someone else that's not going there.
Yeah.
Same group back tomorrow. We'll see you then. Hockey Central. Enjoy.